Quick question. Do your end users always, and I mean always, without exception, work on company-owned devices and IT-approved apps? I didn't think so. So how do you keep your company's data safe when it's sitting on all those unmanaged apps and devices? 1Password has an answer to this question. Extended Access Management. 1Password Extended Access Management helps you secure every sign-in for every app on every device because it solves the problems traditional IAM and MDM can't touch. Check it out at 1Password.com/XAM. That's 1Password.com/XAM.
Packet Pushers.
Welcome to Day 2 DevOps, where the dev oops is in the details. I'm Ned Bellavant, and on Day 2 DevOps, we explore those details and how you can learn from the mistakes of others and build a solid DevOps practice on day one and beyond. With me on this journey of learning and doing is my co-host, Kyler Middleton. Hi, Kyler.
Hi, Ned. Today on the show, we wanted to focus on those at the very beginning of their career. What does the tech industry look like to a recent college graduate? Does their course of study prepare them for the reality of interviewing and performing on the job? And how do you get a job without 5 years of experience? And what is it like drinking from the fire hose of tech jargon?
College is a distant memory for both of us, I think. So today's guest, fortunately, can remember it like it was yesterday or maybe just a year ago. Katrina Janesco is a DevOps engineer level one at Comcast. We met at DevOps Days Philly, and she peppered me with questions about Terraform. And now it's our turn to pepper her with questions about getting started in tech. Please welcome to the show, Katrina Janesco. True story. I did attend clown camp when I was like 12. It was a summer camp.
Katrina, we're going to have to cancel. I want to hear all about that.
That clocks, honestly.
Thanks.
In a complimentary way, that clocks.
Well, the first thing you have to do is name your clown persona. And mine was Hatsy the Clown because I had a multitude of different hats.
That's incredible.
Yes.
You know what? Like improv and stuff, right? Like it helps you get yourself out there. Now, you know, here you are being a podcast personality. It helps.
It's all intertwined.
Your personality.
Yeah.
So welcome to the show, Katrina, formally.
Hello. Thank you.
Let's start at the very beginning. Did you always want to be a DevOps engineer when you were in clown school? Did you sit there and doodle on your notebook and think, I want to be a DevOps engineer? When I grow up, were you like writing bash scripts to automate coffee makers? Or what was the origin of your DevOps journey?
First, I thought to myself, well, I think being a DevOps engineer might pay a little bit more than being a clown. No, honestly, no, I didn't even know what DevOps was until I was literally about to graduate college. So no, I had no idea that that's what I wanted to do with my life. In fact, I hadn't taken my first computer science class until my second semester, my sophomore year of college. And I had no idea that that was even a possibility for me as a path to go down, to go into computer science or software engineering. So I was not programming coffee makers or, you know, I wasn't even playing video games. And so I didn't even know what a server was, for example. So I felt like I was starting at square zero when I started out.
And the world is very cloudified, which like Ned and I, we've been around the block a little. We're dating ourselves a little bit. But when we started, when we were in school, cloud wasn't a thing yet. So I imagine you had classes on Azure and AWS and how to use Terraform, right?
That would have been nice, right? No. You know, talking with other people who have been in the industry longer than me, I have heard that there's this pattern that like it takes quite a few years for the education to catch up with current events and like, you know, where the world is at. So no, I did not have any classes in anything like that. It would have been really cool though. So I went to Temple University in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Philadelphia is where I'm at now. And I want to give them some credit. They did offer some courses that had to do with cloud computing. They were not required. It was kind of like if you had extra room in your schedule and wanted some extra credits, you could take it. So I do know somebody who took one of those classes, which is kind of fun because it was like at the same time that I started my job. So I got to be like, oh, did you learn about this thing? Did you learn about that thing? But no, I didn't take any of those classes. I just took the required courses to get my degree, and no one had recommended that to me either. So I was also graduating into a world of doing interviews for technologies I had literally never heard of before I applied for the job. And that was the case with the current job I have too.
I do want to get into that, but first I just want to talk a little more about what you learned in college, because I did get my CS degree. I'm dating myself a little bit. The programming language we learned was Java.
Yeah.
And we had to go to the computer lab to write the programs. When the teacher was actually teaching us about Java, we would write it down by hand in like pseudocode and then maybe try to port that over. So that's the experience I was dealing with. I'm curious, in terms of technologies you focused on at Temple, was it all programming or did you actually get to interact with more than just like the software development side of things?
That's a good question. And also, funnily enough, I do think this goes to show it does take some time to catch up, because I was also writing pseudocode by hand for my Java class. Yeah, wow. So it hasn't changed a lot, I guess. Actually, I stand corrected. We were allowed to type it, but don't worry, we still wrote out our pseudocode.
Okay.
I was writing it out by hand for exams, though. So.
Wow.
Oh, wow.
Depended on the professor. I had some professors who you can tell that they worked in the industry. And so they would come back to the students and say, I'm not making you writing things out by hand because that's not how it works in the real world. Or like letting us use resources on an exam because you're never going to be at work and you need to remember off the top of your head the exact syntax for a command to open a file. Like I may have passed those exams, but I couldn't tell you how to do it right now. Like I need to go reference Stack Overflow. So it depended on the professor. I get why some of the classes focused on us being able to do that. So, you know, I was in the same boat as you a little bit with some of my classes. I love going on tangents. So let me get back to what the actual question was, I guess you asked.
You'll fit in perfectly here with us, by the way. We love going on tangents.
Yeah. I was curious, like, did they only focus on like the programming aspect of computer science, or did they actually talk about the operational side of things?
I would say kind of. By operational, do you mean like what you're actually doing in industry, or like, can you clarify that?
Yeah, well, I guess there's the operational side of programming, which is actually like committing your code, bundling it up in a release, and then deploying it. So the whole software development lifecycle. So that's operational, but also like the operational side where you're dealing with networks and storage and databases and patching operating systems and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So the second one, I didn't touch that in school at all, like literally at all. For example, when it comes to any of that, that was stuff that my team had to teach me after I started my job. So yeah, that was completely new to me. For the first thing you mentioned, I guess kind of. So at Temple, at least, and I know this is the case for a lot of other schools, but I know that, you know, different students will have different experiences, obviously. So, you know, I'm not the representation of every single person necessarily. But for me, a lot of our work was individual up until your last couple classes.
Sure.
So for me, my senior capstone class and then our class that comes kind of right before that to prep you for the senior capstone. Mm-hmm. I know at some colleges, it's like a two-parter class. So kind of feels like that. That's when you finally do your first real group project and you learn that you need to use GitHub and what version control is and a little bit of best practices on that. I wouldn't say we really went in depth on that. That was more of like, you learned it as you went, but it wasn't structured in the curriculum necessarily. I wish I had more of that, I think. I'm very lucky that I had a capstone professor that I really loved and who I think was able to teach us a lot about the industry and how it worked. Like he kind of forced us to do scrum meetings and follow these little ceremonies. Obviously, like there's only so much you can do when it's a classroom environment, but I think he mimicked it in a way that was good for me because like when I actually got to my job and we had to do these ceremonies, I recognized it and then I just had to like translate it into real world stuff. But not everybody gets that. And I know a lot of people who took the same class as me with different professors or even the same professor and did not get the same thing out of it. So I don't think it's emphasized a lot. No.
Mm.
So we learned about agile, but not about latency. And that's okay. Like, you are just learning foundations, and we're being so superior here that we know about cloud stuff. But
oh, geez, no. Really,
cloud is really just foundational stuff in a trench coat. Yeah. I like to say it's three raccoons in a trench coat, and that's all that stuff is.
Just three.
Maybe four if they're little raccoons.
Raccoons as a service, if you will.
Totally. So as long as you're learning like foundational stuff. And I know a lot of students like today are using ChatGPT and AI to like talk about stuff and occasionally do their homework and without impugning your sort of academic integrity. Was AI a part of college for you? Was it a tool that helped or you were educated on or anything like that?
For me, the like boom of AI and AI coding tools didn't come out until I was already at the end of my college career. So I often wonder what it would have been like for me differently to go through that. And I often feel the same sense of, I guess, like how my parents communicate to me, like, we didn't have cell phones when we were your age and you could just call your friends and blah, blah, blah. I love my parents, but you know. They got to witness going from no one carried a phone around to like now everybody has a mini computer in their pockets. So I wonder if it's the same kind of deal. Like I look back just a few years ago and I see my younger peers going through the same classes that I did and having such a like, to me, I see it as an easier time, whether it is or not can be argued, of course. But I'm like, oh my gosh, like I had to do this project for my operating systems class in C to create my own shell all by myself. And it took me weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks and sleepless nights. And it was so hard. And I didn't even know what a VM was. And yet here's these students right now in this class, same curriculum. And they're just doing it like easy because they're feeding it into, you know, AI coding tools and getting things out. And I'm a little jealous of that. I am. But it's also one of those things where it's like, I'm glad that these tools can be available now. Mm-hmm. Also, I'm not going to lie, I'm also happy in a way that I did have to go through all of that, learning how to find the information on my own and like think for myself. Because in my job, it's proprietary company information, right? Like I can't just feed it to AI, like external tools or whatever. And so I do have to do a lot of that thinking. And how do I find out this information that doesn't really exist on the internet that I have to like go and think through everything step by step? But I do think that AI tools are nice for like when you don't even know where to start looking up information or, you know, being able to ask someone embarrassing questions that won't judge you because it's a computer. So I guess to summarize, I didn't have that going through school. It came out at the very end of my college career and I was too scared to try it until, you know, I was actually like leaving. But I'm sure it's fun to have now. You can do things a lot more efficiently.
And occasionally it convincingly lies to you. So like, it's also not that. All roses, but yes, totally. I wish I had that.
No, that is such a good point, Kyler, because I remember the first time I tried using it, I was a TA for discrete math class, and I was manually trying to create these practice problems where I was working backwards. So it was like, here's what I want the students to learn and get out of it. You know, like, let me create a problem for them. It was like with Hamiltonian paths or something like that. And I kept hearing from a lot of my classmates and friends, like, you need to use ChatGPT. Like, it'll be so helpful for this kind of a thing. And I was like, okay, what the heck? Fine, I'll sign up for an account. So I finally gave in to the scary thing that I didn't trust because I was like, I should probably do this, you know, technology and whatever. I should like know what I'm talking about. So I did. And the first thing it did was it gave me something wrong. And I was like, what the heck? Like, I think it was Hamiltonian paths or graphs that I was trying to make a problem for. And it got the definition wrong. Like it gave me an incorrect graph that like wouldn't work for that. And I remember asking it, the definition is this. So this can't be true. And it said, I'm so sorry. It's actually that. And it kept apologizing to me. And I was like, this is useless. Now, obviously, part of it is, as I've now learned, because I do use ChatGPT and other AI tools every day in my job now. But you have to learn how to use it. right? Like, it doesn't always give you like the copy pastable answer, but it helps you get there and it helps you talk and think through things, which is nice.
Yeah.
But yeah, it sometimes just hallucinates and it doesn't know what's going on. And it can't do math either. So.
Oh, mm-hmm. Yeah. Math is hard. We know this.
Math is hard. Math is so hard.
Yeah. I have also used AI for various things, and it's good for like rubber duck debugging, where yeah. you can throw a piece of code at it and be like, what do you think this code does? And it's usually pretty good at telling you what the code does. And then mm-hmm. sometimes that helps you figure out, oh, because I was not picking up on something that I should be doing inside of it to get the result I want. So in that regard, it's very helpful. And if I just need like a quick, give me a Terraform template that has these three resources in it. It's just for demo purposes. It'll spit that out super quick. But yeah, if it's something that is going to be production grade, then I want to go over it with a fine tooth comb. I do not trust what it gives me.
Yeah.
mm-hmm. Okay. So college, that was the thing. You did that. And you graduated, what, about a little over a year ago?
Yes, actually, well, I guess like a couple weeks now ago, I celebrated my year anniversary at my job. So I graduated in May of 2023. So last year, yeah.
Congratulations.
Thank
That's
you.
That's an accomplishment. It took me 10 years to do it. So.
And you still did it. And that's what matters. And you know what? It doesn't even matter. It's about what you learn along the way. So that's what matters.
See, I love that. It's about the journey, not the destination.
It's about the journey.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, the next phase of your journey was to, you know, get a job.
It was, yeah.
What does that look like for a new graduate? What does the job hunting process look like?
So I can talk about obviously my own journey and also my peers who were entering the same field slash are currently attempting to enter the same field. I had some friends graduate with me who are still looking, and I have some friends and peers who just graduated recently and are, you know, in the process.
Right.
I'm sure you've heard a lot about this, and I'm sure you could look up a lot of people online talking about it as well. But, you know, the job market's not great right now. It's not this like huge, big guaranteed a job boom that I have heard it was. So it wasn't super easy. And I know people who have sent out thousands and thousands of applications and haven't gotten anything past the interview stages, or a lot of the times past the like automatic rejections that you get as well.
Wow.
And so I had a lot of that too.
Oh, that's brutal.
It's so brutal, right? Actually, it really is the worst, I think, when, you know, you're expected to take so much time and thought and effort to write a cover letter, cater my resume, like fill out in your specific platform or instance of Workday or whatever it is. And then I never even get an email back, or like I'm sent from the company like a HackerRank problem to do.
Mm-hmm. Leak code.
Yeah.
Really?
I know. I see you scrunching your eyebrows there, Ned.
I didn't have to deal with any of this.
There was no homework when I applied for jobs, and now there's often homework.
Yes.
I mean, just as a quick aside, like when I applied for my first tech job, it was for a help desk for a retail company. And I'd been working in retail for the past 6.5 years. So I knew about retail and I knew enough technology to BS my way through the interview. There was no like take home work or anything. It was like, do you know how to have a normal conversation over a phone? Can you do basic troubleshooting? Do you know what Ethernet is? Okay, you're hired, more or less. And they were also a company that was in financial straits. So they weren't super picky about who they were hiring because they weren't paying a lot. But I was just like, I need a job in tech, and that's what I wanted.
Yeah.
But every job that I got after that, there was never a scenario where I had to, well, I won't say never, but there was almost never a scenario where I had to do like a take homework or like lead code. It was more just like go to the interview, talk to the people, maybe they bring you back for a second one, and then you're probably hired.
That's not my experience.
So that's not what it's like anymore. Okay.
Again, like I'm speaking from my own experience, which I guess is the point of why you invited me on here. But again, I do just want to make clear, you know, in case people are listening who are my peers and are saying like, that's not what it is like for me. So valid, so fair. I'm only speaking on behalf of my experience and those of my peers. So I'm generalizing a bit for us. But I do know that you do have a lot of instances where people who I think are very, very capable, just as capable as me, if not more in a lot of instances, where they just can't get an interview. Or it's like you get, you know, the leak code problem. Technically, it's not leak code. It's like other sites that just give you these like leak code-esque problems. But Kyler knows what I'm talking about. And it's just like everybody gets the same problem and you solve it. And it's just about getting it right or wrong. Like, you know, did you pass the tests that they have in there for you in the background or not? And they don't get to see how you think through that problem. They don't get to see what your troubleshooting process, your thought process is like, what kind of a person you are. And I also get that there's a huge influx of people trying to enter this field. So, you know, I know you said, Ned, maybe they weren't super picky, but like everyone's super picky now.
Right.
So it's almost like there's just too many people applying. Like, how do you filter through them? And then I would assume that a lot of big companies filter through them by having, like, you know, auto reject them if they don't have these terms on their resume, or auto reject them if they can't do this leak code problem. And I get that in a way, because like, what would I do if I was in charge of that on the other end? But at the same time, like, you're missing so many great people. Or on the other hand, I'm not going to out anybody I know, but hypothetically, somebody else could complete it for you.
Yep.
Yeah.
Now you still have to pass the interviews, of course, if you can get to them, right? Like, right. I can't tell you how many times I get the assessment sent to me and then I literally don't get a follow-up email. Like, I'm just completely ghosted from that company.
Let's pause for a message from today's sponsor, 1Password. Imagine your company's security is like the quad of a college campus. There are nice brick paths between the buildings. Those are the company-owned devices, IT-approved apps, and managed employee identities. And then there are the paths people actually use, the shortcuts worn through the grass that are the actual straightest line from point A to B. Those are the unmanaged devices, shadow IT apps, and non-employee identities like contractors. And most security tools only work on those happy brick paths, but lots of security problems take place on the shortcuts. 1Password Extended Access Management is the first security solution that brings all these unmanaged devices, apps, and identities under your control. It ensures that every user credential is strong and protected, every device is known and healthy, and every app is visible. 1Password Extended Access Management solves the problems traditional IAM and MDM can't. It's security for the way we work today, and it's now generally available to companies with Okta and Microsoft Entra, and in beta for Google Workspace customers. Check it out at 1Password.com/XAM. That's 1Password.com/XAM. And now back to the podcast.
So you've done the homework and you submitted it, and then they never talk to you again.
Never talk to me again.
I don't like that at all.
It's so frustrating because, you know, I've spent 1 to 2 hours per assessment usually, and I'm putting so much time into that. At the same time, I have school, and during college, I worked 3 part-time jobs. Like, I was a busy person. I commuted to school. So I didn't just have like free time to spare. I had to either take off from work or not sleep that night or whatever in order to do these assessments. And then I don't even get the pleasure of hearing back, you know, like, right, not even saying like, thank you, but no, thank you. So that did suck. And it's very discouraging. And I know a lot of my peers who face the same discouragement, especially when somebody's been applying for months and months and months and still can't get past that to get an interview. And they don't know what they did wrong either. You know, like, there's no feedback because, again, like, I get it, on the other end, you're trying to filter through so many applicants. How do you tell from a resume if somebody's going to be good at their job? So I don't know what the answer is, but speaking just from, you know, the applicant's experience, it does suck.
Yeah, I feel like there's all these helpful guides out there to help you craft your resume. Like, there's some magic format and incantation you can add that'll get you through all of those automated filtering processes that each HR department has. But I don't know what the magic formula is. And as soon as somebody figures it out, then they update the filter and it doesn't work anymore, right?
It's funny that you say that too, because I remember I followed that whole thing and redid my whole resume. Again, I'm thinking back to, this was like 2022, the end of the year, going into the beginning of 2023. That was like my main applying time. And for the job I currently have now, I got this with my old version of my resume, the one that wasn't supposed to work. So like the bad one that everyone was like, oh, that's a really bad resume. You're not going to get any jobs with that. And somehow I got the job that I ended up accepting. So no one knows what works and what doesn't. And all these companies have different tools and stuff for filtering through them. So it's not guaranteed that just because you followed like the template you found on Reddit that's supposed to work and used it, it doesn't mean it's going to work.
Once you actually got past that initial stage and got like a face-to-face interview, what was that interview process like? Was it a panel interview? Was it like a bunch of one-on-ones? And like, what sort of questions were they asking you?
Sure. Do you mean for my current job or?
Yeah, I mean, for your current job or any other interview experience you want to share. I'm just super curious about that whole process.
Yeah. So I actually have a good experience to share about the interview process for my current job. And it actually contributed really highly to why I accepted the offer and wanted to work here. But some other companies, a lot of the process was you send your application, you know, you get some automated thing back. Usually what you get back is one of those auto assessments. You take that, that's probably sent somewhere. And then you get something back that says like, oh, we would like to schedule an interview. Sometimes it's an automated thing. Sometimes it's like somebody who's responsible for bridging the gap for hiring. They'll email you and schedule a time and then you get a screening. And then after that, usually you will have an interview. And sometimes it's a technical interview, sometimes it's behavioral, whatever. For my current job, though, it was a little bit different. It wasn't one of those automatic LeetCode-esque assessments. It was actually, so I had a screening call that was just, I guess, an initial thing to be like, are you a real person? And, you know, do you know what's on your resume? And is this you? And like, can you talk?
Just do those. Yeah.
Yeah. So that was kind of the vibe of that. It was more a surface level questions about my resume, you know, screening.
Yeah. Well,
and that was with who is now my manager and one of my colleagues who is a senior engineer on my team. And it was cool because I, you know, as much as they got a sense of me, I got to get a sense of them, which was nice. And then it was a panel type interview. So if I remember correctly, I think it was like four different interviews. It was kind of intense, actually. It was the most intense interview process out of all of the ones I got to the interview stage for. Mm-hmm. There was a technical interview. There was like where it went over like a coding assessment that I'll talk about in a second.
Okay.
There was another technical-esque one that was more like, here are technologies we work with. What do you know about them? That one was really quick because I didn't really know anything.
No, the answer is no, I've never. What is that?
Basically. There was a behavioral one that was more questions like, you know, how do you work in the workplace? Like, here's this hypothetical situation, you know, like getting a sense of, you know, my personality. And actually, I'm forgetting, maybe there wasn't a fourth one or maybe there was, but I'm blanking on it, even if there was. So it doesn't matter. Oh, no, there were three in the screening. That's what it was.
Okay.
So the technical interview was the team had created like a GitHub repository, but like with directions in the README for how to like finish the code. And it wasn't difficult and you could choose which language you wanted to do it in. I chose Python. And I mean, I guess I probably shouldn't give everything away because, you know, in case people interview, they still use it. But you basically had to complete some code that, again, wasn't super difficult. It seemed like kind of stuff I've done in school. The part that stuck out to me that I enjoyed about that was one of the requirements was developer's choice. So you got to do like something, anything to show off what you knew how to do that you wanted to talk about to them. And that was cool because I got to mess around and kind of show them like, hey, I looked up what GitHub Actions is before this. So let me show you that I could do that. And I like implemented a tiny little thing in the repository. And then the technical interview was focused on asking me questions about how I went about doing it and what my thought process was and, you know, what web pages did I visit? And like, they're really asking me questions about how I thought through it. And, you know, like if there were maybe things in the code that were wrong or like were buggy or, you know, if you entered a certain input, it wasn't working. And they would ask me, you know, like, why do you think it's doing that? If we wanted to fix it in this way, what would you do? And I really enjoyed that interview because I felt like it really gave me an opportunity to show how I think and work beyond just like, was the answer correct or not? So that was great. I had a great experience with that. And then even with the, you know, piece of the interview where they were asking me about different technologies and whether I had worked with them in my background. Like, yeah, I totally didn't really know anything, but I mean, that probably wouldn't have gone over well if I had said that, right? So I knew I was interviewing for a DevOps role, right? So I looked things up ahead of time. I was working on my senior capstone project at the time, and we were encouraged to write unit tests for it and be like, sprinkle in some CI/CD, whatever that was at the time. That's what I thought. And so I had kind of dabbled in what is Docker and what is CI/CD on a surface level. And so being asked questions like, have you used Kubernetes? And I'm like, no, but I know it kind of has to do with containers and I know why those are important. And let me talk to you about that. So, you know, I don't know for sure if that's why they hired me, but I do think that there is something to say about if you can communicate well, even if you don't know the answer, being able to say like, here's where my knowledge ends, but here's what I would do to find out, or here's what I would ask to hopefully get there. You know, it's about the journey, not the destination, right?
So hey, we're back there.
We're making a call back.
I think what's so important about what questions they were asking you and gauging your responses, it sounded like they were approaching it from, is this a person that I would want to work with on a day-to-day basis? Do they have a thought process that is amenable to what we're trying to accomplish as a team? And so it's not so much about, do you know this specific technology? It's, are you willing to admit the limitations of your knowledge? So if we're in a meeting together and bouncing ideas around, you're not just going to be blowing smoke up my ass. You're actually going to be honest about where your limitations lie. And then if I need to fill in the gaps for you a little bit, I can do that. But I think that was such a big part of their side of the interview process was, is this someone I actually want to work with?
Mm-hmm. From what we've said, I think I would hire you because you can teach someone all the tools in the world. Like you can teach them specific stuff, but you cannot teach someone to have a good attitude and to be interested in just educating yourself and finding the edges of your knowledge. And that's so critical. And by the way, when they ask you stuff like, do you know Kubernetes? Like I would be very surprised if you knew that coming out of college, but that's kind of maybe the point. Like I always ask someone about something I know they don't know about because I want them to say, nope, I don't know. That's important to know where your knowledge ends because then you don't break stuff.
You're probably right. That's probably what they were thinking.
Well, you got hired. They decided they do want to work with you.
I did.
Good choice by Comcast.
Go me.
Let's talk about day one. You're going in, you're starting fresh. How did you feel going into your first day? And how did you feel going out of that first day?
I was so nervous. I knew that I didn't know anything, right? Like I knew that going into the job. I looked up things ahead of time. I read articles, whatever, but I knew walking in there that I just was not going to know anything. And I knew even less than I thought I knew. So honestly, my first day, I have to give so much credit to the organization that I joined. And I should probably mention that because that is really critical to understanding why I'm having the experience I'm having. So I'm part of Comcast's developer experience organization. We call it DevEx. And it's kind of what it sounds like, right? So you have customer experience. So, you know, you want to make sure that the person consuming the products that you're putting out are having a good time with it, can start using it, can understand it, isn't getting frustrated, is having the service that they need and help when they need it. And it's very similar. I know I'm explaining it as if you don't know, but you know, for anybody listening who might not. For developer experience, it's the same kind of thing, but geared towards developer tools and services. And if you're a developer of, this is the example I always give people who maybe are not technically oriented and want to know what my job is.
Right.
And I'll say, well, let's say you want to visit a website from a customer's point of view or from a user's point of view. I would explain, you know, what the user experience is. And then I would flip it and say, well, let's say you're the developer who created the website. Well, when you create the website, really a website is just a bunch of code written out on a virtual piece of paper. And you have to somehow get that and like package it up neatly and then take that and transport it to the place it has to go and deploy it. And then it has to get to a place where now you can go type in blahblah.com and get to that page that was once written on that, you know, virtual piece of paper. And that can be a really annoying and frustrating and difficult process. And, you know, I've been through it. And so the whole point of developer experience is to make that job easier so that people who are focusing on website development only have to worry about website development. They don't have to worry about how are they going to deploy the site and how are you going to run the tests and, you know, all these fun little aspects. You know, I would say long story short, but I'm really good at making short stories long. So essentially the developer experience is to help developers with the tools and processes that they use on a regular basis be the least frustrating experience possible. And that's basically the organization I joined. And they practice what they preach is, I guess, what I'm trying to get at here. So I joined an organization that focuses on improving the developer experience as a developer on a team there. And so I definitely felt really anxious and nervous walking in on my first day, but I was immediately in an environment that is really, I guess, supportive and helpful because they understand that onboarding new engineers is important and making the onboarding experience good is important. So I was super nervous. And also, I did feel really stupid, I will say, because I just didn't know any of the terms that were being thrown around. But I did feel really, I guess, comforted by the fact that I was encouraged to ask questions. And oftentimes, one of the other developers would stop and ask, wait, do you know what we're talking about right now? And then like run it back and explain it for me.
That's so nice.
Yeah, so I do feel really lucky to be in that position. Like, I didn't know that was going to be the case when I accepted this job. Maybe a little bit because we were talking about the interviews and obviously I got a sense of how they worked from the questions they were asking me. So maybe I did kind of know that's what it was going to be like and maybe that's why I chose this job. But yeah, like I didn't know that I would be in that position. And I know a lot of peers of mine who do not have the same experience as me, who it's kind of like, you don't know it. And that's kind of your fault. I don't know why you don't know it. Like making them feel, I guess, like stupid on purpose, which I don't know. I don't do well with that. I do well with more positive encouragement and reinforcement. So, but that's just me.
Everyone does. I wish there was a reliable way to tell if the culture is good at somewhere, even during the interview process. Everyone's pretending everything's great here. We all love it. That's why there's an open position. Like, no, I know there's probably problems. Be upfront with them.
You asked walking out of my first day. I did feel stupid, but not really, right? Like maybe that is a bad way of saying it because I did also feel encouraged. I think especially after my first week, I felt very encouraged. Because I finally got a sense of how meetings worked, how my team worked. And again, I am lucky to be in a position where the team that I work with, people are reaching out to me to make sure that I know what's going on. You know, people are, even now, I'm a year in and one of our senior developers I reached out to the other day and I said, hey, this tool that we're working on, I don't understand how authentication works with it. Like, do you have any time to go over it? And he spent 2 hours in depth going over it with me. I have like 6 pages of notes for it, but it's really valuable, I think, because my team recognizes that, yes, it might take more time to have to upskill a junior engineer. That's me. I'm the junior engineer. But then once they put in the time for that, now I can be a productive member of the team. And then I can, you know, help the team move better. And I'm still in the process of learning how to do that. Maybe everybody is, but yeah. So the answer is nervous, but I'm still nervous a lot going into my job. I still feel stupid a lot of days. And then other days, I feel like the smartest, most capable person in the world. Depends what I'm working on that day.
You still feel that way, right, Mad? Because I know I do.
God, yes. Yeah.
I feel dumb all the time because it's changing. Even if you're brilliant and you know absolutely everything this moment, like in 2 months, it will have changed. Kubernetes 2 is out. What? What's a container 2? I don't know.
Oh, dear. I haven't been keeping track. Now I feel stupid.
Not a thing. I scared everyone listening. That's not a real thing.
I don't know. I've been so consumed with CrowdStrike that I haven't even thought about Kubernetes.
Oh, my gosh.
So I was going to ask you what training and learning looked like on the job. It sounds like a lot of it is just asking a question and then someone takes the time.
Yeah.
Is there also like a formal learning and training program or a mentorship program along with the sort of ad hoc learning?
So I guess with this part, I'll have to see whether I'm allowed to talk about it, but that's not really proprietary. And also it's a good thing. So like, you know, I feel like I'd want someone to talk about it. Comcast is pretty cool because it has great career programs for early engineers or early career engineers, maybe for other people too. I don't know, but specifically my experience is, of course, you know, with early career engineers. And I've had a great experience with that. Like we have this cool thing called Lab Week, for example, that my organization, of course, being the DevEx organization, is really big on encouraging people in the organization to participate in it. And that's basically like a week-long hackathon type thing for the company. And you can pitch ideas, work on ideas. You don't have to be an engineer, but you could be. You could, you know, create a demo for a project or like a working thing, whatever it is. And it's cool because it encourages especially early career engineers to hop around, work with other teams, other people, get new skill sets, branch out, get visibility, et cetera, et cetera. I've gotten a lot of visibility within the company through participating in that and other cool things they have. They have formal mentorship programs. I get informal mentorship from somebody who is on my team. So I was just kind of lucky that that happened. So I didn't really apply for the formal mentorship programs yet. But I guess like that's just the more like career oriented side of things, the training and stuff like that. There's a little bit of kind of formal onboarding that they do. And again, I think a lot of that, though, is very specific to my organization being DevEx and all. But like I had onboarding tasks like, you know, here are tools you need to make sure you have, you know, make sure you set up these things, make sure you have access to these repositories, these Slack channels, et cetera, et cetera. So that was like a nice little checklist to go down. But it didn't do everything. Like there were times where I'm trying to find the code that somebody was just screen sharing and I can't. And it's because it turns out, oh, I don't have access to it. And then I don't know what the code means. So somebody has to meet with me and explain it to me. And then I don't even know what a CI pipeline is. So somebody has to help me with that too. And what's Terraform? And so a lot of it really is, if I reflect back on the past year, a lot of it is I don't know what's happening. And then either I ask a question about it or somebody asks me if I know what's going on. And then I do some sort of pair programming with somebody who knows more than me in order to understand what's going on. And then I do. So that's a lot of the on-the-job training I got, which I think has been successful. I think I know a little bit more about what I'm doing now.
That's wonderful. That's so cool. Well, go Comcast for making you feel like it's okay to not know. That's an important thing for new learners to feel safe at a place not knowing something because you're new. Of course, you don't know something. And the only place you're going to learn and level up is somewhere you feel safe to say, I have no idea what this code is. What's a Terraform? Please explain.
What is a Terraform indeed?
Well, Katrina, it sounds like you really found a place that helps you grow and learn And are you doing any of that learning in public? Is there somewhere that you're blogging or posting that people can follow along?
Yeah, so it's great that you mentioned that because I did very recently start a blog to be able to share some of my learning publicly. I want to say it's simple, but it is my first and last name. So it's katrinajanesco.net. If you find me there, then right now there's only one article posted, but this is motivation for me to keep writing some more. So you can find me there.
Awesome. Well, Katrina Janesco, thank you so much for being a guest today on Day 2 DevOps. And hey, listeners, virtual high fives to you for tuning in. If you have suggestions for future shows, we would love to hear about those suggestions. Or if you want to be a guest, let us know. You can hit either Kyler or I up on LinkedIn, or you can give us some feedback via the website packetpushers.net/follow-up. Speaking of that website, if you like engineering-oriented shows like this one, visit packetpushers.net/subscribe. All of our podcasts, newsletters, and websites are there, including the brand new shows we have like Packet Protector and Technically Leadership. It's all nerdy content designed for your professional career development. Until next time, just remember that doing DevOps is awesome. So are you.